Oh, happy Friday. Welcome in, everyone. Peter Klein, Logan Gorin, Riley Pollock with you today on what should have been the open of Stampede. What a beautiful day that would have been. But nonetheless, we will still celebrate a Friday here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We have quite a lot of sports to get to today. We have Justin Dunk coming up at 3 o'clock. Plenty to chat about. Thank you for joining us on your Friday. If you have any thoughts on anything we are discussing today, send a text at 960-960. Logo, happy supposed to be start of Stampede. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Yeah, a little bit disappointing. I definitely didn't think I would feel the Stampede loss, but I'm kind of feeling it today with the weather being so nice. And you know, there's definitely just a special feeling around the city when Stampede gets underway. So I'm doing all right, but a little bummed that we're not kicking off 2020 edition of Stampede today.
Now you are a born and raised Calgarian, and I've heard from a few of them that Stampede maybe isn't necessarily their favorite time because everything does kind of get crazy around here, but you're a pro Stampede guy?
I am pro Stampede. I mean, like, when you're younger, like when you're around 18 to maybe 20, I think Stampede's a much bigger deal, and there are always people in this city that like make Stampede a huge event, and it's, you know, the be-all end-all for the week and a half and it's here. And I'm maybe not to that point, but I'm a yearly participant at Stampede. There's always something good, and I for one enjoy the atmosphere that comes with Stampede and the general fun that, you know, seems to kick up around the city this time of year. So I think it's definitely going to be missed.
Now, Riley, back at our downtown studios, I'm guessing that the atmosphere around the downtown studio, a little different than normal Stampede times. It can get a little crazy, and people watching can become almost a sport around there this time of year. But I'm guessing the scene today a little bit quieter.
Yeah, not a whole lot of excitement here. I saw someone with a top hat and a cane walking up to the train platform. And That's pretty much the excitement that's going on around the old downtown studio today.
Well, I mean, how could you want more excitement than top hat? Was that person wearing a top hat and cane in fact you, and you just saw yourself in the reflection?
No, it wasn't me. And, like, the guy was wearing shorts and flip-flops and a t-shirt, too. So, like, really strange combination. But, I mean, it's made my day a little better, so.
That's usually how you wake up after stampeding, not starting it.
Yeah, except my hat is a cowboy hat and it's rolled up in a ball and completely unrecognizable.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's day two wardrobe, not day one wardrobe. So
yeah,
someone
that's not how you kick it off.
No. But no, I miss it. I've been in Calgary in two different stints for about 13 years now, and I just love the buzz of the city. It just everyone. I'm sure there are exceptions, but it just seems like a happier place and everyone's just having a good time. And I will admit, a lot of my ability to enjoy Stampede over the last little while is for the last few years, for reasons that are still beyond my comprehension. I've got a media pass to the Stampede, so it's a lot cheaper for me to get onto the Stampede ground. Once I'm there, everything costs the same, of course, but It's a bit easier for me to access Stampede, but I love it. I just everyone's having a blast. The whole city just lights up for a little bit. Hopefully we can still get a bit of the Stampede atmosphere just with everyone staying 6 feet apart.
Yeah, I hope so. I know it won't be the same, and the Stampede committee released some events that they're going to be handing out through or doing through most of the Stampede, so that'll be interesting to see. You know, I definitely don't think it'll be the same. There's, you know, every building usually has, you know, the cowboy paintings. Everybody's dressed up in plaid, and they got their $5 cowboy hats and stuff. And I was curious enough to come to this point, Klein, where you usually throw out a pretty good question for the day on our shows when we're hosting and stuff. So I thought maybe I would throw one out there for today with it being the first day of what would have been 2020 Stampede. I guess we'll ask the text line at 960-960. What are you going to miss most about not having Stampede this year? I know they're doing a drive-through for mini donuts, so people can get some of those cravings out of the way. But, I mean, it's really not the same. There's no Midway lights. There's, you know, no Stampede breakfasts. There's no parties, all that sort of stuff. So I'm curious what people are going to miss most about Stampede this year.
Yeah, I would tend to. I think that's a great question and a good call. And there's quite a bit to choose from. Like you said, the mini donuts are still a thing that's happening, but there's so much food that goes on at that. I was first introduced to the wonder that is a pierogi poutine at Stampede, and that's I would say changed my life. Like that's a marker before and after. So there's a lot that I'll miss, and to pinpoint one would be tricky, but I'm going to have to take some time to think about it. But for me, it would definitely be something food related.
Riley, other than waking up in an unknown area or household that you're not aware of, what will you miss most about Stampede?
I'm a big concert guy. Saw some good ones last year. So was looking forward to seeing the lineup for this year for Stampede. And that really hurts. Being in that nasty Cowboys tent, watching someone, you know, B-plus to B-tier artists usually. But there were some good ones last year, so that's probably what I'll miss the most.
You know, that's a really good point, and that's probably one that I didn't even think of. The concert lineup at the Stampede, that usually at the Saddle Dome you get three or four, like, really killer acts that you want to go see. And even the Cowboys tent that you mentioned, it's a cesspool, and I'm sure COVID-19 would have absolutely loved moving around in whatever tent Cowboys set up this year. But they've had some pretty good acts there over the years, too. Some pretty big events to go to. I always think secondary of the concerts and stuff that come to Stampede. But even the Coke stage, I'm sure some people are going to miss hitting up some of the acts there.
Yeah, I know we make fun of the Coke stage, and certainly someone whose name attached to the show has fun making fun of the Coke stage. But I went to a couple shows at the Coke stage last year. Glorious Sons played for like 3 hours on the Coke stage a year ago. And Deer Rouge put on a great show as well. So the concert one is a solid one. What you've mentioned a couple logos. Is there anything you can pinpoint, or do you need a bit more time with this one?
I don't know, man. I think I think the atmosphere will be the biggest one, because you're right. And I'm glad that it's not just a Calgarian thing that we feel, that you kind of, if you're from out of town, you kind of feel it too. There's just a definite buzz around the city when Stampede's on. And as someone that works downtown most of the time, I love driving past the grounds and seeing the Midway up and running at night and all the lights and stuff. So I think just the overall atmosphere will be kind of a downer this year without having that. But it's a cool event, and it's something that I think we'll be looking forward to next year for sure.
And I think we're still getting Stampede fireworks tonight, correct?
Yeah. Yes, I believe I should check we did get a statement from the Stampede. They are going to do fireworks twice. I believe they're going to do
the 3rd and the 12th, I think.
Yes, so tonight they will be doing fireworks at 11 p.m. and on the 12th.
Yeah. Which would have been the end of Stampede. So, yes.
Yeah.
It's I mean, like the obvious answer is the thing I'll miss most about Stampede is Stampede. But There's a lot to pick from, so hopefully we get a few good ones on the text line at 960-960. Someone texting in, the fresh smell of puke every morning on 17th Avenue. That's a solid one.
Sorry.
For sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know that you've stampeded until you've contributed to that.
Yeah, that's a fair point by you, Logan. I would say the Rogers Stampede Party, it's pretty hit or miss. Some years, it's an absolute, just, like, fantastic time. Other years, it's not so much. Last year's was pretty good. I think a couple years ago, it ended up being pretty good. It all depends on, like, who decides they're not too cool to come to the Stampede party. And there have admittedly been times where I haven't, but it generally ends up being a good time. So that's definitely something there as well.
Yeah, I've always been, it's not that I've been too cool to go to work functions like that. I'm just always so concerned about just drinking a little bit too much and making an ass of myself in front of my boss and other people of note at our workstation. So I kind of avoid those events because I feel like it's just safer to do that. But I think even this year I'll miss the atmosphere and having all of that sort of stuff going. I mean, like, what business doesn't wind up doing some sort of event for their employees around Stampede? Like, I think pretty much everywhere that I can imagine does a breakfast or some sort of Stampede get-together.
Well, for one, the issue of worried about getting drunk in front of your bosses. If the Stampede party starts at 7, our boss is gone by about 7:25. So you're not really going to have to worry too much about that. And then after that, you would have to do a lot to stand out among the debaucherous at our work. There are,
fair.
And really, the higher up the chain you go, the more out of control, not out of control, but the more you'd have to push them to outshine in that area. So I would suggest next time we're allowed to have a Stampede party, 8 years from now, once this finally clears out, I would suggest just come out. You'll have a good time.
I've been tasked with being the night producer both years that the Stampede party has been going on, so.
And that's because we don't
never
like
know. Yeah, well, I just like to party harder than you guys. And
it's a very sly way for us to say that we don't want you at the party.
Yeah, me coming would have been 50-50 either way, but, you know, it'd be nice to be invited.
One time when I was at 660, the overnight guy came for a couple hours and then went to do his overnight. And that's a good way to really work yourself into the culture of the station.
Well, I was with Breakfast Television last year for Stampede, and there was definitely some, like, get home at 4 a.m., be at BT by 5:45 nights. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a grind. It's a grind, those 10 days.
I want to say it was my second year working at 960. I definitely spent a couple hours recovering from the evening in the studio while we were on overnight CBS Sports Radio. I needed a couple hours to compose myself, and then I knew the station was close, and I had my work pass on me, and I just found a nice place to lay down for a couple of hours, and I felt much better afterwards.
Nice. That's a solid move by you. And someone pointing
out...
Safe
space.
Yes. Someone pointing out a very fine point to you on the text line here, Logo. You work with Pinder. You'll never be the biggest ass at the company party. And that is absolutely... Like, it's one of those... I don't got to outrun everyone. I just got to outrun you. And you're not going to have to worry about getting caught by him.
That's fair. That's a really good point by that texter. I didn't actually think about that, but if my coworkers are any indication, I would have a hard time topping the list at the party. So,
yeah. Yeah, you'd have to do a lot to stand out in a negative fashion, that's for sure. There's actually sports stuff to talk about as well, so we can get to that, but keep the Stampede stuff coming. Anything Stampede related, really, but what are you going to miss the most? Send that in, 960-960. The CFL is where I want to kick this one off today. Kind of got into the CFL mood yesterday, chatting with Mark Quinn McDaniel in our Stampeder Spotlight, and reports coming out throughout the day yesterday, into the night, and then into today, that a hub city is being looked at, and that hub city would be Winnipeg. We've heard a lot of different stories, a lot of different suggestions for the CFL. Are you okay with it? Or I guess just overall, what do you make of a hub city for the Canadian Football League?
I don't know yet, to be honest. I'm really curious as to what our chat with Justin Dunk at 3 o'clock will reveal detail-wise from that, because Justin and Three Down are usually on top of these sort of things when it comes to any CFL news, and I'm curious as to what it would look like, because, you know, at a minimum you've got 4 games a weekend to be played in one stadium, so are we going to run a Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, and a Sunday game? I don't know how that'll work out. It seems very quick to me that they picked Winnipeg right off the start. I mean, we've had plenty of talk about how these two sides haven't agreed on everything so far, and now all of a sudden we're locking down a hub city for this already. I'm curious to see what kind of details come out with this. As far as facilities go, Winnipeg is certainly near the top of the list, probably up there with Saskatchewan, and I guess it would all come down to amenities, and if they were going to do something similar to like the Toronto Blue Jays or something like that, where you're, you know, just hotel stadium sort of thing. I guess you could do that. A little tougher for the CFL when you've got 9 teams that you got to find housing and accommodations for a large number of guys there.
Yeah, it's tricky. And then you have, how is everyone going to practice and things like that, right? Like there's a lot that goes into a week of prep when you're getting ready for CFL games. And the CFL schedule, it's not like the NFL's where for the majority of your season, it's Sunday to Sunday. You have a week between games. The CFL schedule makes you bounce around a little bit. Sometimes you get 5 days off. Sometimes you get seven. Sometimes you get nine. It's all over the place. And so there's not a set schedule anyway. But I do think that a practice schedule when you have nine teams using the same facilities would get a little bit tricky. So I don't know. I would rather there be a hub city and that sort of a season than nothing at all. But I don't know if one hub city is enough to hold an entire league, even one as small as the Canadian Football League.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm extremely pessimistic on this topic. I think there's about a 5% chance that we see any CFL this season, just to get everyone to Winnipeg, all those things that you've listed, the fact that there won't be any fans in the stadium and it's such a gate-driven league. I think they'd lose even more money from doing it that way, just to put everyone in hotels for, you know, 3 months, 2.5 months. It doesn't make sense to me to do a hub city with how the CFL is set up. And I don't see any CFL football being played this year.
No, I wish I didn't agree with you on that, but I'm in complete agreement with you on that. This is a league that needs there to be people in the stands for there to be money to be made. And as much as they get off of the TV contract and some merchandise sales, like you said, you need butts in the seats in the Canadian Football League. And even if you let a few people in Winnipeg, because who knows what it's like in a couple months by the time September rolls around. But yeah, I don't like the chances. And then it's not like the CFL and the Players Association have just like a nice, easy relationship, right? And they're going to have to agree on a lot of different things for this to work. I think there's just too much to get figured out for there to be a CFL season.
Yeah, I just don't see the logistics of it yet. Maybe they're farther along than we think. But I mean, even just, you know, you mentioned the practicing and all that sort of stuff during the week. Does Winnipeg have adequate facilities to, you know, let these guys go to different areas and practice at different practice facilities, so they're not always at Investors Group Field just for practicing? And then, you know, you're talking about big groups for football teams, much larger than even hockey teams, and especially like basketball teams. You're talking about a large group of guys like that, and I don't even know that the CFL would have the money for, you know, the kind of daily testing we would need. You know, all the logistics stuff that comes with it, or, you know, housing a bubble. And, you know, we've heard the NHL talk about payment for the players so they can do some things while they're there. I just don't know that the CFL can find a way to do that. It feels like we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves talking about a hub city when there's so much groundwork that we would need to get to before any of this happens.
Yeah, it's so much to work out. And it's... There's a lot of CFL hate, and it's very easy to get down on the CFL at times, but there's just so much to work out, and they haven't necessarily given me the confidence with the $150 million ask. And then, oh, what's it going to? I don't know. We'll figure it out. Like, we're not off to a great start with thinking the CFL can just figure this out.
No, it's when you're asking for money like that, it doesn't give you a whole lot of confidence in the plan. And the fact of the matter is there hasn't seemed like there's been much of a plan through a lot of this. It's been kind of a disappointing stretch for Commissioner Randy Ambrosi, if you ask me. I was a big fan of his work expanding the game, and some of the rule stuff that he's put in. It really looked like he was putting in some good work towards the league, but handling this pandemic has probably been one of the down spots of his tenure as commissioner. There's just been so little planning and execution, and even communication with his Players Association, which is so critical, as we've learned throughout this. If you want to get anything going, you need to be in lockstep with your PA, and they're clearly not at that point yet. And, you know, we call it the Canadian Football League, and that's fine and good, but when a lot of your playing talent comes from south of the border, and there's a lot of problems south of the border, that in and of itself is such a huge hurdle to get over that talking about a hub city just feels I don't know, feels like it's way down the line.
Well, look at all the work that the Blue Jays had to do to get 60 guys into the country. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a few of them were already here, but like that was a lot. When you're talking about the CFL and over half of your league has to make it up here, that's going to be a little tricky. So there isn't a whole lot of confidence that I think they can get it done. And for Randy Ambrosi, you bring up a good point, because there have been a lot of things that he's done that I think he's really done some great work with. And then there's some other stuff where it's, what were you thinking was going to happen there? Like there's a lot of pros, but there's a lot of cons early on in the Randy Ambrosi era in the CFL.
Yeah, and look, I don't want to say this because I don't know 100%. I feel like if the CFL weren't to have a season, I'm still confident enough that things could come back next season, that it's enough of a business model and enough of a Canadian law. What's the word I want to use here? Enough of a Canadian, I don't want to say icon, but enough of a regular part of Canadian life and heritage that, you know, the CFL will be something that hopefully can come back next season. So I'm with Riley in the point of, you know, how much money can you really make even if you do come back for a shortened season and a condensed season? It might not just be financially smart to come back either.
No, and Major League Baseball talked about it, and it was frustrating when they had their discussions because it was billionaires wondering if they could afford to lose money this season. The CFL loses money pretty regularly, even with butts in the seats, right? Like, we heard about how they were losing, what was it, $10 to $20 million a season. And then it's, oh, okay, well, wait a minute. There was no COVID last year. Last year was a regular season that you just got to have, and you're still losing that money. It's tough. And I think there needs to be a lot changed in the CFL. And one of the things, if the league can survive missing a season, which I certainly hope they would be able to, but if they can, I think this is an opportunity for the league to kind of figure out, okay, let's take a step back and let's really look at some of the things that we need to work on. I think if there's no season, this is a wonderful opportunity to change your schedule up. We've talked about it a lot. It's been a fairly contentious issue for some people based on players coming from the States and things like that. But I think this is a great opportunity if you're going to move up the schedule, you're going to have a quicker offseason than players would be used to. That's not necessarily the case going into next year. So if you want to adjust your schedule, now is the perfect time to be able to do that for the Canadian Football League.
Yeah, and look, the CFL is an interesting league because while you mentioned that they lose money, I think that the CFL has a few teams that I would say are considerably stronger and probably more likely to be able to survive these scenarios than others. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be the worst time either, you know, you're talking schedule and that sort of stuff, to take a look at some of your struggling teams and see exactly what you need to do to get these teams back, you know, into relevance in their own markets and how you're going to bounce back with them. I don't worry about the Rough Riders. I don't worry about the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. I think Alberta's two franchises with the Stampeders and the Eskimos are on pretty solid ground. The fan bases are pretty supportive in both markets. The ownership things have been worrisome for Montreal the last few years. But I feel fairly solid about them, and the Red Blacks have come back strong since their revival, which is nice to see. But, you know, you do have problem areas in Toronto and BC in two of your biggest markets, and you have to figure those two out. You can't just carry two anchors like that going forward. Those are two markets that shouldn't have any problem. You know, if any other CFL team is, or city is an indication, you know, getting fans in the stands and putting on a good product, but they've just struggled for so many years to do that. If this is a good chance to kind of relook at that and see if you can figure things out, then I'm all for it. But you just can't carry teams that are just losing money like this year after year and just don't seem to have any community impact like that. It's just not going to work out well.
The Toronto problem is interesting to me because they've tried everything. As frustrating as it is that the Argos seem to be completely irrelevant in the Toronto market, like you've brought in star players like Ricky Ray. You've brought in exciting players like Chad Owens. You have had championship-winning teams even a few years ago. Like there's, you have had success. You have had stars. You've brought back stars of the past. Pinball Clemens is always hanging around there. All the things
well, he's
like
the, he's
if you
GM
build
GM now.
Yeah, exactly. He's a major part of that team, and he's been a part of that team, whether it be from a marketing standpoint or actually with the organization, on and off for, it seems like, forever. And when you check all those boxes, one of those is supposed to work. I don't know what it is that you're going to do with Toronto to make it successful. I don't even know if missing one full season and dedicating that much brain power to it is enough to fix Toronto, but you got to at least keep trying. Like, you can't just punt on the Argos.
No, and if anything, if this is a good chance to look, you know, at your own league and your own sort of problems, and while I understand Randy Ambrosi trying to grow the games and or trying to grow the CFL game and expand the market and the talent pool and all that sort of stuff, maybe some time to look, you know, at the 9 teams you have now and get all 9 of those on solid ground and moving forward is a better idea than, you know, trying to grow your game outwards right now, because you have 2 big problems there. And you're right, Toronto seems to have tried everything. They've been successful for short stints. They've, you know, tried to have a connection to the organization or to the city in different ways with legendary players and all that sort of stuff, but it just doesn't seem to stick. So if anything, if you're going to lose a season, you know, maybe make the focus of the lost season how you can come back stronger in those sort of markets than before. Because like I said, you don't have to worry about Saskatchewan or Winnipeg, those sort of things. They're solid and are able to build moving forward.
Yeah, Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, Hamilton, I think you're okay here. I think it could be better here, but I think you're all right here. Same in Edmonton, but BC and Toronto, you need to get those ones figured out. Like you're getting in Toronto, you're getting your ass kicked by rugby. Like, and that I said that more dismissively of rugby. I think it's a fine sport and it's actually really entertaining, but it's just not one that you would think would come up and grasp the CFL and drag it down another notch. So no, the Toronto discussion is fascinating. And I think another part of this too, and we're kind of up against a break, but I mean, whatever, it's pandemic. I think another thing that would really help the Canadian Football League is trying to help out with the success, I guess, of U Sport. And the pause there was, what are they calling it now? Because it's changed a few times. But when you look at the NFL and the NCAA, when guys get to the NFL, they're already household names. Like they've already been stars for 1 to 3 years. In the CFL, I would say even most hardcore fans can't name 5 kids in U Sport. And so I think you kind of need to build that one up too and just get people familiar with some of the players in your league.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. And Riley, I can bring you in here because I know that in our time at Mount Royal, at least the broadcasting program that you and me came up through was, you know, trying to make a good connection with the hockey teams, men and women, in at University of Mount Royal. And I'm curious if that's the same case everywhere, you know, if that's not a bad idea for the CFL and U Sports to find common ground like that, because I think you're right. Until draft time comes up and we get, you know, lists and draft profiles from guys, I don't know that we're, you know, ever at that point. And you look, university football, from everything that I can tell, is much bigger east of this, you know, in this country than it is out in the west here for the most part. And there's very successful programs out east, which is almost opposite to the CFL. So I think that there is a market out there. I think there's fans out there that want football, but making that right connection and taking that step forward is something that they've struggled with for a long time.
Yeah, and it's tricky because all the guys who are coming in, like, okay, first overall pick, and it's all due respect, it's a bunch of offensive linemen, and then it's a receiver who has like six catches at UCLA and stuff like that. There are obviously exceptions, and I'm generalizing wildly, but there isn't that like superstar, oh, look at this dude coming into the draft. And Riley, I know Logan said he was going to bring you in, and then I cut you off, so I apologize. But I do think that if you build up U Sports a little bit, I think you get a bit more familiarity with CFL players.
Well, the problem with there not being a superstar coming into the CFL draft is that if there's a superstar, they're going to the NFL draft. So it's tough, right? Because all the best Canadians obviously are going to the NFL if given the chance, and it's such a no-brainer. It's not even close. But yeah, I think, you know, it starts with the broadcasting. I think, you know, that there could be so much more done with the CFL. You know, the draft is, there's two rounds on the TV, and then you have to go to CFL.ca to watch the rest of it. Like, there needs to be so much more done with getting the product to more eyes. And I just, at this point, I don't know, like, how you do it, but you just have to cover it more when it comes to the major sports markets here in Canada, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I would take it one step further. And again, like, a lot of this can come across as criticizing the CFL. I think all three of us are coming at this from a place of love. This is a league that all three of us have covered in some way, shape, or form, and a league that we've all followed in some way, shape, or form as well. I think if, like, just go all out with the access stuff. Like, just turn the whole season into Hard Knocks. Like, why not? Like, you get what we saw with The Last Dance, we see with Hard Knocks all the time, and the 24/7 specials. Some of those things, I believe, helped turn Floyd Mayweather into a major superstar in boxing. If you actually get people attached to these personalities, and I think a video game is part of that, but it, just do a full season behind the scenes. Every week, have people attached to it. It would be a quick turnaround, and it'd be a hell of a lot of work, but I think you would get people invested in some of the personalities of this league.
Yeah, and look, for me, it's almost as simple as, and I know we're up against it for a break here, but
whatever.
It sounds cliche, but the younger fan and the younger generation and that sort of stuff, and that's where I think the video game comes in, and that's where I think markets like Vancouver and Toronto would really benefit, because, I mean, those are the two that worried me the most throughout this whole process, and you know, we're kind of generalizing the story of a hub city into the bigger overarching issues of the CFL, but I think it's a fair conversation to have, because the future of the CFL is pretty unknown at this point. And while we, you know, started off talking about a hub city, I think we all agree that that's a bit of a dream right now, to get to the point where we have a hub city. So I think it's a fair conversation to say, look, that these are the overarching problems that we'd like to see worked on if we don't have a CFL season.
A couple texts at 960-960. Toronto so badly wants an NFL franchise, they will not support the CFL and try to kill that league so they can get, I'm assuming this is supposed to say, an NFL team. Look, there's always been a passion for the NFL in Toronto, apparently, aside from the Buffalo Bills playing there a couple of times. I think you can do both. I think you can pull off having passionate NFL fans and building a CFL audience. Someone else texting in, guys, if hockey's having a problem attracting youth to play, what chance does football have against smartphones, online gaming, and social media? Not a chance. Well, first of all, hockey's problem attracting youth is that it costs like $4,000 before you even step on the ice. I don't know if that's because kids are just playing video games these days. But you do have to, like, go to a CFL game. There are, again, talking in wide generalities here, it ain't the youngest crowd you've ever seen. You definitely have to try to attract more, like us three in relatively the same age group. I am a bit older than you, considering you went to Mount Royal University and I went to Mount Royal College. There aren't a whole lot of people our age talking about the CFL, and that, I think, is a big thing that needs to change.
Yeah, it's not a CFL-only problem, but it's certainly certainly noteworthy to say that, you know, the CFL's biggest problem, or one of its biggest problem at least, is finding new fans in a younger demographic to spend money there, because you're right, it's not a a very diverse age group that goes to CFL games for the most part.
Here's the thing, too. I mean, every single person I know in Regina goes to the Riders game, and it's not to watch the football. I can tell you that. There's the Pilsner Party Zone there, and it's $35 for a ticket, and basically everyone from the age of 19 to about 25 tries to get into the Pilsner Party Zone, and it's literally just a party in the end zone, but it's still getting people in the seats. I think, like, Toronto, first of all, their tickets are way too expensive for how few people want to go there. They got to lower all that. They probably should make kids under 16 free so that you can develop something with that next generation, because if you're taking your kid from when he's 4 years old to when he's 16 to a game for free, it's not like you're just going to stop going. There's probably something that's developed for that kid in those 12 years. So you're probably still going to keep going, and that kid's going to start going by himself with his friends. You got to make stuff cheaper or free for the youth, and hope you get a new generation in the seats.
Well, go ahead, Logo.
Well, and just to continue off of that, I mean, Peter, you made the question that you felt, you know, fairly good about the team here and the team in Edmonton and stuff. And look, I've long said here, I know Calgary is a good football market, and I know the stadium holds things back a whole lot compared to what it could be, because there's limited tailgating. There's only so much you can do at McMahon. I know they've tried the patio thing, they've done all that sort of stuff, but you're right, Riley. Look at the new home of the Riders. There's tons of areas. There's, you know, standing room. Even in Ottawa, they've got that TD place there. They've got, you know, standing room tables where you can go and have a couple beers and walk around and do stuff, making it more accessible and making it about more than just the game at these things, making it an event and, you know, being able to do other things is so important. And I don't think that they've done a good enough job of that in Vancouver, in Toronto, and especially in Calgary here, where I know there's a good football market. You've seen it. You can see them on the sellouts and the passion that there is for the CFL here, but they're just limited in what they can do.
All right, we do have to take a break. We've referenced it like 8 times. Hey, I know we're up against it. Now we definitely are up against it. So time for us to take a break, but we'll definitely revisit the CFL conversation as the day goes along.